Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. A lot to share. The latest on Alzheimer's and some contributing factors that we could prevent. Also, what happens when we get too much brain. Now, we've all enjoyed the taste of peppermint, but what more does it do for us that we should be using it on a regular basis? There's a lot, and it can help with a lot of conditions. Something happening in Japan that's not happening in the United States. The truth about the Gardasil vaccine. Japanese teenagers are charging that they got cervical cancer from the human papilloma vaccines, and it's been taken seriously. Well, we have the same problems here. Our media is controlled. You're not going to get the same objectivity. Also today, walking can cut a tremendous amount of diabetes risk, and I'll tell you about that and why and what we can do about it and how to walk and to really benefit yourself, because there's junk walking and then there's healthy walking. And then according to some new research as presented by Christina Sarich, one tablespoon of aloe a day can reverse aging. Just one tablespoon. So on health and nutrition, always the latest, always some good quality independent peer-reviewed literature. The guest I'm having in the second part of our program is well known to many people. He is Greg Palast. Greg is a journalist with the BBC and the British newspaper The Guardian. And he's going to talk about Larry Summers and a memo that led to financial destruction and what having Larry Summers as head of the Federal Reserve forebodes. No one else has covered this. No one else knows about the memo. We do, an exclusive on our program. Then a commentary. I spent the weekend writing and thinking about the march in Washington and why I considered it incomplete and why I believe that some of the guests of honors should never have been there. And 11 people whose words should have been read because it was really about what they have done. Plus, an in-depth commentary on presidential rule by deception. Obama, the master con man, by Professor James Petras. We have a lot to share. Let's begin. First off, I work with a lot of people who have brain disorders, including Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, ALS, multiple sclerosis. And one of the very first things I do is a very comprehensive dietary history. And almost without exception, they have anywhere between 20 and 30 items on a regular daily basis that causes brain inflammation. So we try to get those people to lessen or eliminate all of those pro-inflammatory agents. So then you can begin the healing in the brain. A new University of California at Los Angeles report as published in the peer-reviewed journal of Alzheimer's disease says the following, quote, eating too much red meat, which raises brain levels of iron, may heighten the risk of developing Alzheimer's disease. This was done by researchers at the Simmel Institute of Neuroscience and Human Behavior at UCLA. Now, what does this mean? What it means is that you have two proteins. You have what is called the tau protein, T-A-U, and the beta amyloid. Now, the older we get, these two proteins either disrupt signaling between the neurons or kill them off. And red meat and its constituents in the iron in red meat contributes to this, which is one of the reasons that people who are healthy vegans maintain their brain power much longer. And the more inflammation than a meat eater, and the much longer, not just in maintaining it, but also in keeping the amyloid plaque at a minimal level. So you simply have a healthier brain. So all meat can cause inflammation. My suggestion, start in a process of lessening the meat, maybe going from every day to every 3 days, then in time every 2 days, and once a week, and then eliminate it altogether. It may take you a while, but you're going to benefit from it. I came across some interesting research on peppermint. Now, peppermint is a very important plant. It's created from the blending of watermint and spearmint. And peppermint is used mainly for flavoring food and cosmetics and soaps and toothpaste and mouthwashes. But peppermint leaves can be used dried or fresh in teas. Now, all over Europe, peppermint is cultivated and used. Peppermint is popular as a traditional and folk remedy for a lot of different conditions. For example, it's used as a calmative. It's used for gas, for PMS pain, for diarrhea, for nausea, for depression-related anxiety, for muscle and nerve pain, the common cold, indigestion, and irritable bowel syndrome. Now, according to some new research at the University of Maryland Medical Center, they have found that peppermint kills some types of viruses and fungi and bacteria. Peppermint oil is a concentrated oil. It's made from the peppermint plant. Now, peppermint oil can be generally bought in a health food store, and it's very powerful. And according to an article in the scientific journal Natural Product Communications, the chemical components of peppermint oil are methyl and methone, as well as the methyl acetate and limonene. Now, these are all very powerful. So what do we know now that peppermint oil can do? Well, viruses, irritable bowel syndrome, pain, bloating, diarrhea, and gas, they're all able to help. Another study carried out by use researchers at McMaster's University in Canada, published in the British Medical Journal, conclude that doctors should recommend peppermint oil and fiber as the first line of treatment for irritable bowel syndrome. And then a study published in a major scientific publication in Germany showed that it's good for diarrhea and irritable bowel syndrome. So around the world, they're using peppermint oil. We don't use it in the United States. We might use it as a flavoring, but we think that's it. It just has a nice flavor. No, I'm saying it has very good quality healing nutrients. In fact, peppermint oil is widely used for calming skin eruptions and itchiness and reducing redness. And it's very beneficial for headaches and migraines. In fact, there was an article in the peer-reviewed journal Headache that quote, nose plug and counter stimulation with peppermint prevented the onset of headaches and associated symptoms, end quote. Then from the peer-reviewed journal American Family Physician, two separate studies demonstrating the efficacy of peppermint oil in relieving the symptom of tension headaches. And peppermint oil also could help treat the cold or flu that is inevitable in so many people. Interesting article in Phytomedicine peer-reviewed journal on, quote, based upon its wide antimicrobial properties, Olbus can be useful as an agent for the treatment of uncomplicated infections of skin and respiratory tract. And by the way, Olbus are complex essential oil distillates containing peppermint oil and eucalyptus oil and other oils. So that's just to let you know, start considering peppermint oil. I've been doing a lot of research for a new article that will be presented in the next couple of weeks on the human papillomavirus and what we don't know about it and how we've been manipulated by the manufacturers, the vaccines, to get people indoctrinated in believing that it will prevent cervical cancer. It won't. There's no science to benefit that supposition. But here's what we do know. There have been more people die and be hospitalized and have adverse effects and paralysis from the human papillomavirus vaccine than any other vaccine in recent history. We seem to take it for granted in our society. Others are not as complacent when it comes to something as so dangerous to its public health. For example, in Japan, this is the latest from the Kyoto News reporting and from the minister, health minister. Japanese teens in a lawsuit claim they developed cervical cancer after being vaccinated against the virus have called for the government to end the injections. Japan's parliament revised a law in April that allowed girls 14 to 18 to receive a vaccine that prevents the human papillomavirus that causes cervical cancer. This from the news service. The vaccine is sold under brand names such as Cervarix and Gardasil. And then it goes on to talk about the testimony of all these kids, including those who are permanently paralyzed and testified in wheelchairs. The advisory panel to the health minister has concluded reports of convulsions, headaches, even partial paralysis were caused by the vaccines, and that the government should stop recommending the vaccines. In June, the health minister told local governments that girls 12 to 16 should no longer get the vaccines. Well, no girl should get the vaccine because there were no studies that had any basis in science that would show it would prevent cervical cancer. Pap smears, that prevents cancer. On to another issue that's important for our well-being. This is University of Hawaii Cancer Center showed that increasing your fruits and vegetable intake is linked with lower bladder cancer risk in women. This is published in the Peer Review Journal of Nutrition, and that's good. There was 185,000 participants in the multi-ethnic cohort study. It's a long-term study, and it was 12 years. So they're saying, get your fruits and vegetables. The more you eat, the better it is. Quote from the lead investigator, our study supports the fruit and vegetable recommendations for cancer prevention. You bet. My suggestion is 12 to 13 servings of organic fruits and vegetables a day. Also from the University of Oslo in Norway, the omega-3 reduces ADHD symptoms in laboratory animals. And that would be good for any parent who has a child that's been diagnosed with ADHD to be able to make sure your child's getting the omega-3 fatty acids. In the last week, I had an opportunity to complete a health retreat. It was really nice. So many wonderful people. It was a fundraiser for our sister stations, WPFW in Washington, where people are listening right now, and WBAI, our sister station in New York, where people are listening right now. I'm sorry that we couldn't allow everyone who wanted to attend. Hundreds and hundreds of people couldn't make it. We will do another one. But for those who did attend, and it was packed, the last day, some people gave some testimonies. I don't have time today to share those with you. They recorded them. Some amazing turnarounds in just 6 days. But some of the spectacular results were the amount of weight the people lost. Two guys in a row got up who didn't know each other, but each lost 14 pounds. And they were on the track working out. And yet they were not restricted. No one was restricted in their caloric consumption. They had a lot of food. I mean, a lot of food. Far more than what they would normally eat. And juicing on top of that, as many as 15 glasses of juice a day. So it was a major detox, rejuvenation, cleanse. And when someone said, how is it possible that we've all lost all this weight? I think the lowest amount was 7 pounds. The most was 17. I said, well, it's the walking. Do you realize what you do when you power walk, when you exercise, when you're doing it right and you're moving all your muscles and your body is heart is beating and your metabolism is speeded up and you're benefiting? And it is indeed, it's not just about what you eat, it's what you do to burn off those calories and reestablish a new apostat. But also people's pulse came down. When everyone came to the retreat, I had them take their pulse and the average is about 80. When they left, the average was around 70. Now, if they keep that up, they're adding years onto their life of their heart, because the higher your resting pulse, the worse your heart is, and the lower, the better it is, as far as one indicator of the dynamic health of the heart. Here's the latest from Imperial College London. Quote, walking for a 40% cut in diabetes rate. Next time you quote crawl, you are crawling along in your car and wondering if you should just park and walk to work with other pedestrians, consider this. A new UK study suggests people who walk to work are 40% less likely to have diabetes compared with those who don't. Now, this was just published in the American Journal of Preventive Medicine. They reviewed 20,000 people, and it's the power walking. This was done at the School of Public Health at Imperial College London. Now, anybody can just go out and walk. That's not beneficial. That's called junk walking. But where you walk uninterrupted to get your pulse up to about 65% of its optimal level, that is very good for you. You burn more calories, you burn more fat in the cell. You increase your metabolism, you sleep better at night. All of that, detoxification, all increases. And your hormones can come back into balance. It's great for human growth hormone in men and women. So it's terrific. And that's one of the reasons people lost weight. Plus, they were detoxing. Massive amount of toxins coming out of people. Just massive. Because they'd say, I never knew all that stuff could come out of me. Well, imagine how bad it is if it stays in you. And that's what happens when we don't have really healthy digestion and assimilation. And finally, from our health and nutrition segment, according to Christina Sarich from Natural Society, just one daily tablespoon of aloe can reverse aging. Here's what she says. Quote this. If you could turn back your biological clock and look younger from taking something that is good for you in numerous ways, wouldn't you jump at the opportunity? There's so many cosmetics on the market that promise younger looking, more elastic skin, but they're often full of chemicals and endocrine disruptors that are cancer-causing along with other undesirable effects. However, just one tablespoon of organic aloe vera gel every day can significantly reduce wrinkles and make skin more youthful in appearance. Who knew the health benefits of aloe vera extended so far? Aloe packed full of numerous nutrients and other substances that promote not only younger looking skin, but also a healthy body overall. The plant has 75 different nutrients, including enzymes and phenolic compounds, lignans and saponins and sterols and amino acids and salicylic acid, a common ingredient in acne medication. And no wonder the herb is able to reduce wrinkles completely naturally and without side effects. One study conducted on women in their 40s found, quote, aloe gel significantly improves wrinkles and elasticity in photoaged human skin, with an increase in collagen production in the photoprotected skin and decrease in the collagen-degraded MMP1 gene expression, end quote. So without taking copious amounts, just 3,600 milligrams, that's 3.6 grams a day, of this wonderful plant's healing gel, we can turn back the clock, especially for women who have spent years basking in the sun and have the skin to show for it. So, aside from using aloe vera for more youthful appearance, we can utilize the plant as a topical salve for wounds to help speed the healing of cuts and burns. And when taken internally, it helps control diabetes, elevated blood lipid levels. It also helps to treat acne and soothe the sunburn and reduce bleeding associated with gingivitis and gum disease. And aloe vera gel can improve digestion and heal stomach ulcers, as well as stomach upset and irritable bowel syndrome. It can thin sticky blood, prevent kidney stones, and help oxygenate the body. It also reduces high blood pressure and makes yeast infections a thing of the past. And it's been shown to help treat certain types of cancers. End quote. Well, in point of fact, I've studied the science on aloe vera, and she is correct. So let's remember some of nature's most perfect foods to help us. I'm Gary Nall. That's our health and nutrition segment. And now I'm going to share a few things on the environment before we take our break and on public health issues. From our environmental segment today, from Davis, California, from the Terra Daily. Climate change threatens the extinction of 82% of all of California native fish. And this was published in PLOS One, a major scientific journal. This was done at the Center for Watershed Sciences at University of California. Quote, salmon and other native freshwater fish in California will likely become extinct because of climate change. Then it lists all the different fish that are going to become extinct. And that's unfortunate, but that, I believe, is already tipped. I do not believe that we're going to be able to do anything about that. Here's something else we're not going to be able to do. A lot of people are living on the water or close enough to the water that they would be impacted by the water. And here is the issue. We know that the water is expanding because when water is heated, it expands. It's not that you have to have a rise in the water per se. What you have is an increase in the surge. So you could have in one storm a 30-foot surge, which means it would go right over any retaining walls and wash out the sand. There was an article in yesterday's New York Times, a major full page, on the fact that Miami Beach is losing its beach, but all of Florida on the West Coast or East Coast is losing its beach. It showed a 2-foot drop from where the beach used to be to where it is. Now, here's the problem. They've run out of places to buy sand. They're even considering a technique where they use pulverized glass instead of sand. Sounds strange. I'm not familiar with the science, so I won't comment upon whether it's doable or not, but it's expensive. Their only other option is they have to go to other countries and buy sand from the Bahamas or other places. But based upon how far the water's coming in at night, and then what happens when the tide comes in, it then goes into the ground. It doesn't all wash back, but when it washes back, it washes the topsoil back with it. And then that dissipates. Well, you can't recollect that sand because for a long time they've been trying to get all the sand they can. They've run out of sand. So what you're going to see now is you're going to see beaches that are no longer the kind of quality of beaches with the sand that you once had, nor the aesthetics that go with them. That is not the future. That's now. But also remember, everything that's on the beach will have its foundations eroded. I'm not talking about 5, 20, 30 years. I'm talking about this year, next year. I predict the following. Let's see how accurate I am on this. Of the thousands and thousands of homes and major buildings and big condos holding hundreds of apartments, that within the next 36 months, 3 years, you'll see major cracks in their foundations. You'll see emergency efforts to try to create barriers. But remember, none of that will work. Why? Because every single one of those buildings, they have concrete stanchions that go into the ground and that rest on sand, not bedrock. So in time, nature pulls out the underlying support, the stanchions weaken, the building develops cracks, and then they're no longer usable and stable or safe. We're talking about in the near future. But there's one last problem living on the water. Quote from Alistair Gray and Piltia Clark, warming ocean makes parts of the world uninsurable, say insurers. Quote, insurers have used a rare warning that the speed at which the oceans are warming is threatening their ability to sell affordable policies in a growing number of places around the world. Parts of the state of Florida and the UK were already facing a, quote, risk of environment that is uninsurable, said the global insurance industry trade body, the Geneva Association. They were unlikely to be the last areas for such problems. He said the governments needed to invest more in flood defenses and tighten building restrictions in risky locations to mitigate the fallout from extreme weather hazards, citing losses from Superstorm Sandy, which struck particularly hard New York and New Jersey, at $65 billion. Governments may have fiscal austerity issues in the short run, but in the long run, they're going to have big exposures to repair damage infrastructures from storms. Now, what this means in lay language is simple. If you live near the ocean or on the ocean, all it's going to take is one big Category 4 or 5 storm where you get up around $100 billion in losses, and that's it. You won't find anyone except the state that will be willing to give any form of insurance. Ah, here's the rub. No state has the resources to put at least $200 or $300 billion into a public insurance program. The state of Florida now has an enormous debt into the tens of billions of dollars because it helped co-insure or guarantee some homes. They can't do that anymore. So you're going to find yourself waking up one day and realize you don't have any insurance. None. And so if there's a storm and you get hit, you lose everything. Now, that's not me saying that. That's the insurance agencies, and they're stopping the insurance. They'll start doing the same thing, I believe, when it comes to where you build in the environment. Look today. Look at one of the largest fires in California history in the Great Park, one of the greatest natural parks in the United States. And it's spreading. Now, what's the likelihood that insurance companies are going to go ahead and insure homes, million-dollar homes or big homes, in those wooded areas? They're not going to, because there's permanent drought and permanent fire. So remember, any place that you live in the future, you have to look at sustainability and that are you in harm's way from earthquakes, tornadoes, nuclear meltdowns, gas hydrofracking, superstorms. These are all going to be happening at increased levels. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Broadcasting all over the world, and we thank all of you for joining us. I got some figures in. We're the number one listened to internet radio station in the world, and we thank you for that. And we have lots of people listening over the telephone as well. The numbers are just mind-boggling. I was notified that over 5.5 million minutes alone have downloaded. That represents a lot of people. If you'd like to ever listen to this program or its archive shows over the phone, call 619-550-0869, 619-550-0869, and that way you're always in touch. I want to thank the people who helped our efforts to help the station. After all, at the end of the day, not only did people turn their health around and awareness from the retreat we did for the stations, but you have to have a really good support team working together. And I want to just thank Magdalena Chen and Rupert Ravens and Luann Panessi, who gave so much of her time. She was counseling 12 hours a day. Claire Adams, who came in from out of town. Claire owns her own business, very successful. There she was in the kitchen every day donating her time. Cindy Semillion, Mary Wayne, Jim, the coach of the Natural Living Running and Walking Club. What a guy. Helped, was there on top of everything. Valentina Farsi, Charles Joyce from Ohio flew in. JP flew in from California. My daughter Shelley from New York. John Q, who did all the exercising, water aerobics, you could hear all over the property. took a lot of people to help all these people. Michael Chepasi, who did the show people how to do reflexology and meditation. And in the kitchen, Connie Monteleone. Thank all of you, because all of you people donating your time, I donated my time. It was an effort to help the station. Sorry again for the hundreds who couldn't come, who wanted to, but I promise you we will do it again, and that time you'll be able to get in. Just a couple of issues before we go to our guest and some commentaries. I'm concerned about the 18 million children who go to bed hungry each day in the United States. Why is this not a national issue? Why is this getting no attention? This is the latest from Jamie Doward of The Observer. Child poverty in Britain is causing social apartheid. Quote, Britain's risks sleepwalking into a world where inequality becomes so entrenched that our children grow up in a state of social apartheid. That's according to the National Children's Bureau, that finds in many respects child poverty is now a bigger problem than during the 1960s when it carried out a seminal study, Born to Fail. The report compares aspects of children's lives today to data from the Born to Fail, and they find that children are worse off today, and there are more of them worse off today. They have less opportunity. They will have greater likelihood of unintended injuries, accidents at home. Those children from the poorest area are 900% more likely than those living in affluent areas to have no access to green space, no places to play, no environments with better quality of air. Boys living in deprived areas are 300% more likely to be obese and suffer from diseases. Girls are 200% more likely to be obese and suffer from conditions. So the conditions that we're seeing now, the disadvantage to our children, I have to ask, what did they do deserve to be neglected and forgotten by our body politic and by our larger society? Because they have been, and that's just not fair. But to extend that concept just a little further, here are some facts from Paul Buchheit of Alternet about hunger that demonstrates the shameful excess of American capitalism. Because of all the miseries placed on human beings in their everyday lives, the lack of food is one that is virtually inexcusable. Even in a world controlled by unbending attitudes of self-reliance and individual responsibility, the reality of children and seniors and disabled citizens going hungry is a stain on humanity, a shameful testament to our goal of profit without conscience. When I think about the programs I wish to do and positioning important topics, I must always bear in mind the weight on every scale of my decisions is, can this information help someone? Can this rebalance the scales of justice? Can it harmonize? And every time I look at the mainstream media, in Congress, I see a Congress, Democrat and Republican alike, willing to cut food programs, including this president, and the very food programs that feed low-income children, the least amongst us. According to the Department of Agriculture, 48% of supplemental nutritional assistance programs, SNAP, were children, 48%. And yet you'll hear the Bill O'Reillys and the other self-righteous narcissists attack our welfare system. Well, exactly how, Bill, is a young child who's hungry, how are they a burden to you, and how are they responsible for being that burden, that you would call them out and blame them? You're either unaware or indifferent to the suffering of anyone outside of your own predicament and class. We would also cut assistance on every level, and we do it regularly. McDonald's, for example, profits doubled. They have 440,000 employees at McDonald's, and the average wage is $9.10 or less. That's $18,200 a year. The company's profit was $8 billion last year. That's just about the amount if you averaged it out per employee. Now, here's my question, and it's a simple one. Why not do the ethical thing? Why not, McDonald's, hold back 30% of your income and then increase the living wage of those who are working for you? So instead of making $18,000, they'd make $30,000. You would still make a profit. you would still have a strong stock. But at least people working for you, the 440,000, wouldn't have to work two jobs. But it's all about profit. The 10 richest on the Forbes list increased their combined wealth by $60 billion last year. That's equivalent to the total salaries of 3,378,000 fast food and counter employees who work 40-hour weeks, 50 weeks a year. Apple avoided enough taxes on its profits, according to the World Bank, that could have paid for a food program that would have allowed 115 million people to have eaten. And yet that's not the priority. Making the extra dime, the extra profit is. So this is, at some point, should get someone's attention. I'm concerned about what I see. And I'm also concerned about what I don't see. In Washington, D.C., I would have been ashamed, if I was one of the sponsors, to have invited Eric Holder and President Obama to speak. Not because they're not eloquent and could not have given some rousing and memorable discussion, but it's what's behind their words and what those who've come before them have done and whose words were not mentioned. Because look at the reality. Here's the roster of people who should have had their words spoken. Martin Luther King said, "The greatest purveyor of violence in the world today is my own government." By saying that, he would have immediately been on at least 16 different security agencies' terrorist list. He was opposed to the war in Vietnam. He was opposed to segregation. He was opposed to corruption with inside the federal governments and the FBI. In all likelihood, if we did not know him as Martin Luther King, if he was just an activist, conscientious objector to war, he would have been either arrested, rendered for torture, or killed. Quote, "We have guided missiles and misguided men." Quote, "I refuse to accept the cynical notion that nation after nation must spiral down a militaristic stairway into the hell of nuclear annihilation. I believe that even amid today's mortal burst in whining bullets, there is still hope for a brighter tomorrow. I still believe that one day mankind will bow before the altars of God and be crowned triumphant over the war and bloodshed. World peace through nonviolent means is neither absurd nor unattainable. All other methods have failed. Thus, we must begin anew. Nonviolence is a good starting point." And yet, the people who spoke are drowned in the blood and misery and suffering of millions of people around the world. How dare they stand in such a sacred place and with such sanctimonious piety mouth anything? Malcolm X said, "You're not to be so blind with patriotism that you can't face reality. Wrong is wrong no matter who does it or says it." Well, then what would have been the sense of committing crimes against humanity as the Bush administration and the Reagan administration and the Carter administration all did, and the Clinton administration, not hold them accountable? As Malcolm S. said, wrong is wrong. Doesn't matter when you committed the wrong. Doesn't matter who committed the wrong. If you have one standard, then we should all be held accountable for it. Quote, "If violence is wrong in America, violence is wrong abroad. If it is wrong to be violent defending black women and children and black babies and black men, then it is wrong for America to draft us and make us violent against those in other countries. And if it is right for America to draft us and teach us how to be violent in defense of her, then it is right for you and me to do whatever is necessary to defend our own people right here in this country." And quote, Malcolm, you would have not lasted a day. You would be at the top of anyone's list of considered terrorists based upon the current definition of anyone speaking out against corporate America, public policies, foreign policies. You're on a terrorist list. Quote, "I don't see an American dream. I see an American nightmare." And finally he said, "It is not impossible for capitalism to survive, primarily because the system of capitalism needs some blood to suck. Capitalism used to be like an eagle, but now it's more like a vulture. It used to be strong enough to go and suck anyone's blood, whether they were strong or not. But now it has become more cowardly, like the vulture can only suck the blood of the helpless. As the nations of the world free themselves, the capitalism has less victims, less to suck, and it becomes weaker and weaker. It is only a matter of time, in my opinion, before it will collapse completely. But who also would be on today's terrorist list? Who today in all likelihood would be assassinated? Who today would be considered such a threat to the corporate elite, to Wall Street, to the corrupt politics of Washington, which are all of the politics of Washington, that he wouldn't have a day in between looking over his shoulder to feel that he had another day ahead? And that would be Frederick Douglass. Did he not say, where justice is denied, where poverty is enforced, where ignorance prevails, and where any one class is made to feel that society is an organized conspiracy to oppress, rob, and degrade them, neither persons nor property will be safe? America is false to the past, false to the present, and solemnly binds herself to be false to the future. To suppress free speech is a double wrong. It violates the rights of the hearer as well as those of the speaker, Frederick Douglass. Mr. Douglass would be abhorred by what has happened to anyone who dares to utter a word in the freedom of speech context today. But he would not have been invited yesterday, nor would Mahatma Gandhi, who said, what difference does it make to the dead, to the orphans, to the homeless, whether the mad destruction is wrought under the name of totalitarianism or the holy name of liberty and democracy? Send that to Barack Obama, the good war president, the one that you invited, Al Sharpton, yesterday. And remember what Gandhi said. And then take the time, go not to Newark, go to each of the cities in Iraq, Afghanistan, Somalia. Go to Libya, go to Syria, and ask them, what difference does it make to the dead, the orphans, the homeless, whether the mad destruction is wrought under the name of totalitarianism or the holy name of liberty and democracy? I object, quote, to violence because when it appears to be good, the good is only temporary, the evil it does is permanent. And who else would not have been invited because they would be on a terrorist list or rendered or dead by a missile, a drone? Desmond Tutu, quote, if you want peace, you don't talk to your friends, you talk to your enemies. Stability and peace in our land will not come from the barrel of a gun, because peace without justice is an impossibility. Who else would be considered a terrorist? The Dalai Lama. All forms of violence, especially war, totally unacceptable as means to settle disputes within and among nations, groups, and persons. And then who was invited? The biggest warmonger in the last 50 years. Who else would not have been invited? Albert Einstein. Force always attracts men of low morality. Let me repeat that. Force always attracts men of low morality. Quote, it is my conviction that killing under the cloak of war is nothing but an act of murder. Well, there were an awful lot of people then who support murder, and yet are given the advantage, always the advantage. So where does this take us? It takes us to understanding that we have become a nation that is confused. We now make all anti-war activity a designated domestic terrorist threat. Quote, from Common Dreams, anti-war activists targeted as democratic terrorists. Shocking new revelations come as activists prepare to sue the U.S. military for unlawful spying. Anti-war activists who were infiltrated and spied on by the military for years have now been placed on domestic terrorist list, they recently discovered. The shocking revelation come as the activists prepare to sue the U.S. military for unlawful spying. Quote, the fact that a peaceful activist such as myself is on this domestic terrorist list should be a cause for concern for other people in the United States, declared Brendan Dunn, plaintiff in the lawsuit. We've seen an increase in the buildup of a massive surveillance states under the Obama and Bush administrations. The discovery is the latest development, a stunning saga that exposes vast post 9/11 spying networks in which military, police, and federal agencies act in cahoots. Documents declassified revealed that military informant John Towery, going by the name John Jacobs, spent over 2 years infiltrating and spying on Olympia Washington, anti-war and social justice activist. Towery admitted he to the spying and revealed that he shared information not only with the military, but also the police and federal agencies. He claimed that he was not the only spy. Yes? So now let's put this in context so we're clear on this. If yesterday W.E.B. Du Bois, the great black civil rights leader, who said either America will destroy ignorance or ignorance will destroy the United States, he said, what do nations care about the cost of war if by spending a few hundred million in steel and gunpowder they can gain 1,000 millions in diamonds and cocoa? He said, perhaps the most extraordinary characteristic of current America is the attempt to reduce life to buying and selling. Life is not love unless love is sex and bought and sold. Life is not knowledge save knowledge of technique, of science of destruction. Life is not beauty except beauty for sale. Life is not art unless its price is high and is sold for profit. All life is production for profit. And for what is profit but for buying and selling again? Nelson Mandela was on terrorist list. Quote, there are many people who feel that it is useless and futile to continue talking about peace and nonviolence against a government whose only reply is savage attacks on an unarmed and defenseless people. If you want to make peace with your enemy, you have to work with your enemy. Then he becomes your partner. And one last one, who would have been arrested? She would have been with Bradley Manning, spending the rest of her life in prison. Harriet Tubman. Every great dream begins with a dreamer. Always remember, you have one within you, the strength, the patience, and the passion to reach for the stars to change the world. Now, she was someone who really made a difference in a good way, at great sacrifice to herself. Here's the bitter irony of all this, and I will save my larger commentary for tomorrow. All of these people who were there yesterday, I'm assuming most were anti-war activists who believed in social movements. All of them today would now be considered potential terrorists. All of them would have been under scrutiny. All of them would have had photo IDs, retinal IDs. And yet here was a gathering of people coming to celebrate a notion of peace and historical precedence, and now would be considered enemies of the state. And they invite two people who have eviscerated the Constitution, who have eviscerated their Bill of Rights, who consider them in contempt and do not represent them. And imagine how many of the agents of suppression, of totalitarianism, of police state overreach were there mixing and mingling. Because now it has come clean. It has come true. They now view every anti-war person as a domestic terrorist. What kind of bitter irony is there in this? And all this was missed by the media. I'm Gary Noll. These are my thoughts. Let's go to my guest who's standing by. He is a newsmaker guest. He is Greg Pallas. Nice to have you with us today, Greg.
Great to be with you again, Gary.
Greg, by the way, has worked for the BBC, the British newspaper The Guardian, the same one that's been releasing the Snowden and Glenn Greenwald written pieces that have informed us the truth of our government, considering us a threat. He has also been called by the Tribune in the UK the most important investigative journalist of our time, and he runs the Palace Investigative Fund and a project of the Sustainable Markets Foundation. And he is also holds an MBA in finance from the University of Chicago, and his recent book is Vultures Picnic, In Pursuit of Petroleum Pigs, Power Pirates, and High Finance Carnivores. Greg, here's the issue. I found it almost incredulous that Larry Summers, in my opinion, one of the most contemptible human beings on the planet, who has led so much destruction in the economic market to the average person, would be considered the most powerful person outside the President of the United States. The head of the Federal Reserve has more power because of what they can do with money and interest rates than anyone else. And yet he's right up there being considered as one of the top three people as if he didn't have a history. You've come across a memo, that memo that led to financial destruction and what we're calling the great crisis. he was responsible for. Tell us about the memo. Tell us about what your feelings are on Larry Summers.
Well, Larry Summers is Obama's, and he told senators, is his clear favorite choice to replace Ben Bernanke as head of the Federal Reserve. You have to know a bit about Summers. He was Treasury Secretary under Clinton and Deputy Secretary to Robert Rubin. His main accomplishment in his terms, and what we are suffering today, is the deregulation of the banking system. What that meant is that the investment banks, which are basically casinos, were allowed to merge with commercial banks, which are piggy banks. And so you replace a bank vault with a roulette wheel. And as they say, what could go wrong? And the answer is the collapse of the world economy, starting in the United States, and also allowing corporations or banking investment banks like Goldman Sachs, J.P. Morgan, others to sell derivatives. J.P. Morgan having $88 trillion of derivatives listed as assets on its balance sheet, $88 trillion. Summers was deeply involved in, it was one of his big babies, was to deregulate the finance markets, and he personally used his position as deputy secretary to body block any regulation of the derivatives market. That is securitizing subprime mortgages, synthetic collateralized debt obligations, and all this toxic junk, which has brought the planet to its knees. And what I did find, I found that, for those who know Greg Palast, I do a lot of investigation by digging up internal and confidential documents. In fact, now my work, I guess, is a jailable offense, Gary, as you would point out. But I did obtain a confidential memorandum from Tim Geithner, who eventually became Obama's Secretary of Treasury, to his boss, Larry Summers, at the Treasury Department back in 1997. And it's suddenly incredibly relevant if this guy is going to be head of the Federal Reserve. Because in that document, Geithner is revealing that Larry Summers was having secret meetings with America's top five bank bigs. Now, you can have Treasury Secretary can meet with bankers, can't have secret meetings with bankers in which they are deciding the policy and foreign policy of the United States. And that's exactly what they were doing. And there's the memo. It was so incredible that I had to fly to Geneva, Switzerland to confirm it. I actually met with the Secretary General of the World Trade Organization to confirm this material. And you'll see, if you go to gregpalast.com, you can see this, the write-up of it, but also the memo itself. And it has five phone numbers, the personal phone numbers of the CEOs of Goldman Sachs, Bank of America, Citibank, Merrill. These are the bank bigs. They're their private phone numbers. I even called one, and then I had to declare that I wasn't Larry Summers by BBC rules. So I got a click, but I had no secretaries. These are the private personal numbers of these big bankers. And Summers was secretly having them determine what our national policies should be. And in particular, it was a scheme that they'd come up with, the five big bankers with Larry Summers, Robert Rubin, and Tim Geithner, a secret scheme to not only deregulate banking in the United States, but to deregulate banking in every nation on the planet, 156 countries at one time. And the way that they came up with it was brilliant, devious, and incredibly destructive. They used the World Trade Organization's trade rules to eliminate financial regulation worldwide in one swoop. They told every nation that's a member of the World Trade Organization, you sign on to eliminate your banking restrictions, allow J.P. Morgan into your country. You have to accept toxic assets. You have to have derivatives trading in your nations. All these things that eventually brought nations like Greece is in flames from this stuff. Greece's destruction, by the way, started out with derivatives transactions with Goldman Sachs. All this became policy, secret policy of the United States, directed by these five bankers. And they did this by saying, if you don't sign on, Gary, they said, if you don't sign on to deregulating your banking industry and opening yourself up to this toxic financial assets, you will have no trade with the United States. There would be an effective embargo with the largest market on the planet. A lot of nations, like Ecuador, which is literally a banana republic, its main product is bananas. If it didn't sign, it would have to eat its own bananas and go bankrupt. So Ecuador signed. Every nation on the planet in the WTO signed, except for one, Brazil. Brazil, under Lula, the progressive president who had just taken over, absolutely refused. He said, okay, embargo us. I have other memos threatening him, threatening the destruction of his economy. He says, I don't care. And it was only Brazil of the Western economies that thrived during the worldwide financial crisis while everyone else was on its knees because Lula said no to this Larry Summers scheme. So this is who Obama has decided is his number one choice to run the central bank of the United States, which is effectively the central bank of the planet.
What do you see would be the probable outcome of him being head of the Federal Reserve?
Well, we're seeing it already. We're seeing Greece in fire, 26% unemployment in Spain, Detroit. Part of the reason Detroit was destroyed was that China cut a deal with the Summers scheme. We'll let in your banks a bit if you give us your auto parts industry. We lost 2 million jobs there. Almost all auto parts are made in China now. Used to be made in Detroit. Detroit's bankrupt now. So we already see what the world a la Summers will look like. And it doesn't look very pretty. And what I'm very concerned with, I'm going to be doing a part two to this article, which you can now read at gregpalace.com or Vice magazine, is Joe Stiglitz was in the cabinet, was in the Bill Clinton's cabinet when Summers was there and Rubin was there. And Summers was constantly asking, every time an economic policy came up, what would Goldman think? In other words, no policy could be approved unless it's something that would benefit and receive the approval of Goldman Sachs. So if we want a nation in which our economic policies and the world's economic policies are determined based on the approval or veto of Goldman Sachs, then Larry Summers is a great choice. I mean, I have to tell you that Joe Stiglitz, who was in those cabinet meetings, was horrified. He was president of the – he was chairman of the Council of Economic Advisors to the president. And he just couldn't believe that the Summers would sit there with Rubin and say, what would Goldman think? And, you know, if Goldman thought nice thoughts, it would be one thing. Goldman thought that, yeah, if you deregulate the market, the mortgage market in America will implode. And Goldman Sachs made $4 billion for itself and its clients, betting on the collapse of the U.S. mortgage market, $4 billion. So what they thought was the world can collapse and only make money. They sold secret euro currency swaps with Greece to hide that nation's deficit. When they came out, the nation fell into complete depression, and it's unstoppable. One in four people is out of work. Same in Spain. Yeah. So what these guys think is that if you light the world on fire, you can make money at the fire sale. And Summers thinks that that's just that makes good policy. And it is stunning to me and to people like Stiglitz, who, by the way, won the Nobel Prize in economics, not like he doesn't know what he's talking about. People are stunned that Larry Summers' name would even be brought up, let alone being the first choice for this unbelievably powerful position.
Final short answer, Greg.
Mm-hmm.
If what he did was illegal, could there be an action to promote getting an investigation to see about he and the bankers being indicted?
Here's, as you brought up just a minute ago about Eric Holder, who's going to read this guy his rights? Who's going to tell Larry Summers you had illegal meetings, you hid private meetings with bankers on the private policy of the United States, which did and could enrich them? That's illegal. Who's going to cuff this guy and tell him to spread him? Eric Holder? You know, this is the problem. It's the, you know, the kind of perps are also the cops.
Got it. Greg, thank you for informing us of this and giving us an insight into this memo that was never supposed to have seen the light of day. You've got it. You shared it. It's illegal. And that was what led to the entire economic collapse or contributed substantially to it. We never knew about this insider dealing, and now we do. So I thank you for that.
Thanks for the opportunity to bring it out. Thanks, Gary. Bye.
It's Greg Palast, PALAST.com. I'm Gary Knoll. Thank you all for listening. Tonight, powerful show at 7 o'clock. You won't want to miss it. And now let's say hello to Utrice Lead. Hi, Utrice.
Hello, Gary. A great program, by the way. Talking today about the festival of contempt over this weekend, of people talking loud and saying nothing, as James Brown said.
Well, that's what I just dealt with. So we're looking forward to how you're going to handle this. And tomorrow I have a whole commentary on this topic. Have a nice day, everyone.